There's the sound of the gong. There's the sound of the gong. Well, I guess it's time for the kids to come out of the streets and off the freeways, off the highways and the skyways, and enjoy another evening, a nice Saturday Night Live show with Dr., none other than Dr. Fred Bell of Paradigm Corporation of Southern California. I hope you all enjoyed the last shows. That was a three-part show that we did, finishing last Saturday night. On time travel, scalar wave energy, healing techniques with X1 healing machine, the T700 time travel transposer, and one type of Pleiadian spacecraft energy propulsion system, actually maybe two, the ARV, reverse engineering vehicle, that one of my friends flew out at Area 51 a number of years ago. All kinds of cool stuff. Even we didn't get into the reticulin shifts and how they work, and we did get into maglev. We got into all kinds of stuff. That was a lot of fun. That was a three back-to-back jam-packed episode series that we did. So tonight we're going to talk about some more current things. If anybody wants to reach me, you can always email me at fredbell@paradigm.com, or you can call into the show afterwards. I'm not taking calls during the show. And they can patch you over to me. It's all possible here at bbsradio.com, the leader in the industry right now. Soon everybody will know about this show. Word spreads fast. Tonight I want to talk about sometimes I have to talk about local topics and mix them in with other possibilities and topics. And, of course, some of you have heard my shows back, going back almost 30 years. And so as a result of that, you notice I was talking about the end of days, the millennium times that would be coming here soon. And that's kind of where we're at now, if you noticed. And if you notice, the world's on an acid trip. Those of you that have taken acid in the past, you don't have to now. You just have to go out your door, turn your television on, and you're there. Because the consciousness that we were exploring on our psychedelic journeys in our younger days, a few of you that did it, only revealed an energy that's pretty much predominant here in the world now. Because when you take those psychedelics, as I've explained, and how all that chemical works in the brain in earlier shows, it just takes you a little bit forward in the realm of time and possibilities. But the bottom line is, it's the carrier energy of the forward motion, the observational energy, the awareness that the lysergic acid or mushroom psilocybin, whatever you're using, would do, rearranging your serotonin in your brain. It just gives you a perception of the future, what it's going to be. It's not real at the time you're on the drug, according to the world, because mass mind isn't there, but you get the idea. Insanity is sort of the topic tonight. It's we've covered depression. I think insanity is a better topic, and for several reasons. Number one, as we evolve around the Pleiades, we become more and more aware of our situation. Our electric light circuits in the brain, the electric light crystalline structures in the DNA start to light up, and the spirit or the fabric of our soul is able to perceive what the outside world is really like. And in this waking up process, a while back we discovered that we were being regulated by rulers and dark forces, and so we began to put titles on these rulings like lizard energies and negative energies and the dark side and the devil, Satan, and all the things that would explain away our ignorance. But the bottom line is, you are responsible for your own perceptions, and you are a self-governing unit. We all are. You just have to act like it. And most people don't want to take the responsibility. They have a tendency to stay in denial. So as a result, they're going to complain a lot. Now, I know, for example, back when I lived in Europe 10 years ago, that I knew that the gas prices were going to come to what they are in this country, which is about $4.50 is where they're going to end up for a while. They may even go higher now. I also knew that anything, anyone or anything associated with fossil fuel technology pays a huge price karmically for that, and that is loss of consciousness, loss of reasoning, loss of feeling. And you can pretty much see by the way the oil companies and the government work that that's true. Secondly, we also should notice that as we, through the 70s and 80s, started to realize that we were not governing ourselves, but we were being governed by the oil money people and the people that control large industry, that we began to outgrow the need for government. Government is only, basically governments were put in place to oversee religious beliefs. And this, of course, started 2,000 years ago when we were in the Piscean Age, in that particular rotational faction of our rotation around the Pleiades, our, you know, central spiritual sun, and the precession of the equinox, which I've said many times before, is, I didn't hear anything, 26,827.5 years, the same number of inches around the base of the Great Pyramid, and proportionately the same height to length or width, height, and circumference ratio as the carbon atom in the body or the iron in the body. And then basically the pyramid defines consciousness anyway. And I think most of you know that. I'm sure you're very well aware of that. So I was, for the last 2,000 years, because man could not have a circuit firing off the synapses in his brain and resonating through the crystalline structure of the DNA at a rate high enough to support a vibratory consciousness of God in the higher realms, whatever you interpret God to be in the higher realms, within the boundaries of our bodies, which just didn't work for most people. Sure, if you took enlightenment or took life of seclusion or became a Buddhist monk or some kind of a, you know, some strong study of the higher forces of resolve, and you enacted on that over a period of time, yeah, you would reach an enlightened or higher consciousness state. But the average person in the last 2,000 years was trying to find God. You know, they were looking at outside for God, not inside. So everybody had a different view through their eyes, ears, nose, and throat, and their actions and their perception of their actions. So religion was formed. And then, of course, everybody became very insecure within themselves, so they took their insecurities and transformed it into the religions that they formed. And so then now they wanted to protect their beliefs. So governments were formed so that they could amass money from the people, organize the people, get the children, the sons and daughters of the children, to go out and fight crusades against other people with unlike religious beliefs. And we went on a world conquering spree. But as a result of that, over the years, we now have come into the perception and the understanding the world is one now. Religion is not one right now, but governments are getting in the way of our expression. Governments are now trying to control our religious beliefs, for those of us that are religious. So in the process of controlling religious beliefs, taxation has been enacted. Taxation is very important to support the controlling factions within the government. In other words, we've got to pay the soldiers, we've got to pay the president, the king, the ruler, the monarch, the manic, whatever you have. Most of them are manic monarchs or poor presidents or whatever you want to call them out there, because they still live in that time. They're living in Pisceans. Piscean Age. We are in Aquarian Age. So, Aquarian Age thinkers don't think like Pisceans. Well, tonight's story starts back about 1928 when my dad was working for Henry Ford, Sr. Henry Ford had about 40 acres in Wayne, Michigan, right outside of Detroit, where he had his estate. And he grew trees. He grew hemp plants, because up until the Taft-Harrison Act, Narcotic Act, was passed, I think, in 1938, it was okay to have hemp trees. You didn't smoke them. It was not a cannabis sativa. It was the number one oil of the turn of the century product in the world, was hemp oil to light your lamps. It was the great paper-producing element. The Constitution was written on it. And when you made hemp rope and sails and put them on ships, which still sailed in those days, even though they had steam, they had a tendency never to rot, like the cotton ropes, the wool ropes, and later on nylon ropes, which deteriorate with the ultraviolet of the sun. These old ropes, hemp didn't deteriorate. Well, Henry Ford had a friend. His name was Rudolf Diesel. I'm sure you've heard of the diesel engine. And both of them knew that their machines, their engines, were work-saving devices for humanity, and they should be an all-natural process. Remember, steam only involves fire and water, and that was a natural process. Even though that black smoke that came out of the old steam locomotives was pretty intense and pretty dirty, it didn't destroy you. It was not toxic. Well, Henry Ford hated the petroleum industry. He could even then, you remember, here's a man that set the American workplace and set up the workers' dream. Mass production made it possible for about $700-$800, which was a little bit of money in those days, but everybody in America eventually could afford a car that ran on, he thought, methanol. What was wrong with methanol? Nothing. When you burn methanol, created from corn or, in those days, hemp, the exhaust pipe was carbon dioxide and water, water that you could drink because it was heated and purified. Carbon dioxide, which would go back into the atmosphere and feed plants, which then caused them to produce more oxygen. And as a result of them producing more oxygen, we wouldn't have had a greenhouse effect, nor would we have acid and alkaline rain, which is all created by the side effects of dinosaur fuel. The second problem with fossil fuel, which Henry Ford saw, was it is located in strategic areas around the Earth, where the tectonic plates have a tendency to come in contact with each other. It's always found in shale deposits, which are plate deposits. Shale is a plate substance. Or it's found in pockets between the plates. And as a result, oil has a very thick thing called its thickness, or its texture, or its pressure. I mean, its density is called viscosity. And so oil was a natural shock absorber, just like we have shock absorbers in our car. Cushion the ride, oil was a natural shock absorber to cushion the effect of the Earth's surface versus the tremendous weight of the Earth's surface versus the Earth's core and everything in between, all the strata in between. So when man started pulling out all of these oil deposits, it started putting huge flaws and cracks and stresses. It would be like taking a steel support beam and putting it on a stand and having it, say, extend 5 feet in the air, and then making a flat plate on top of the steel support beam, and on that flat plate put a 100-pound bag of sand. So what you would have is a 5-foot-high table with a 100-pound bag of sand on it. And then what you would do is the steel support beam that supported the table part, the plate above the ground with the sand resting on it, you go out and get a drill and you start drilling lots of little holes all over that steel beam, thousands of little holes. Eventually, you'd have enough holes in that I-beam sticking up there holding that table with that 100 pounds bag of sand, you'd have enough holes that the I-beam would collapse and the 100 pound bag of sand would fall on your head. That's exactly what happens, because when you drill the hole through the steel, you're destroying the viscosity of the steel, and you're creating an air pocket where the steel was. Same thing happened with the Earth's surface. Therefore, the earthquake went up a billion times since the 50s, a billion times the frequency of earthquakes. So it's not hard for a prophet to predict that we're going to have more earthquakes. Science, about the early 80s, discovered that this might be a possibility. So what they began to do in these empty oil holes is filling them up with water. Problem with that is that water is not as dense a viscosity unit as oil. So without the viscosity of oil, water cannot support or act as a cushion for these plates. So that would be the analogy of that in our steel plate holding a 100-pound bag of sand with our I-beam, has hole drills in it. As soon as we drill a hole, now we would put a, let's say, a piece of tissue paper in there, in that hole, and expect the tissue paper to assume the support of the previously occupying hole of steel. Or maybe put some balsa wood in the hole, fill the holes with balsa wood. Different strength characteristic wouldn't work. The 100-pound bag would still of sand would still fall on our heads. Rather than falling on our heads within 5 minutes of drilling, it might fall on our heads within 7 minutes of drilling. Bottom line is, the sandbag would fall. Bottom line is, the surface of the earth settles, you know, settling. Here in Laguna Beach, we've had this happen twice, where because of the short attention span, we had junkyards and dumps out in these canyons 40, 50, 60 years ago, then fill them over with earth, as they always do, and then 20 years after that, the contractor comes along and builds a house on it. Of course, the sewage and stuff is still deteriorating. Some things take 40 years to collapse, like hard pieces of wood, things like that, that were dumped, people cutting their trees, and then a house collapses. Same thing. People just don't get it. They don't want to get it because of greed. Hello, greed, money. So Henry Ford hated the petroleum industry. He knew right away what the end game was going to be, but there's nothing he could do about it. He just made cars, and same with Rudolf Diesel. There were cars and diesel machines, and diesels, people know, you can run them on paint thinner. They have a lower compression ratio. You can just about run anything that'll burn in a diesel anyway, and it'll run just fine. So what happened was, these oil cartels started to build up pretty quick all around the world. They financed wars, you know, during the when Hitler went into Russia, one of his motives for going into Russia was to get into the lower Ukraine, the southern part of Russia down there, lots of oil fields. When we went into Iran, we didn't care about the Iranians or Saddam Hussein. We made up a bunch of stories. We wanted the oil. Now, we're still not bringing the oil out. We're storing it. Matter of fact, the Iranian oil is in our storages today, and they're running over. Absolutely. United States oil surplus is owned by the government is completely, you couldn't put another ounce of oil in those tanks. Secondly, oil pricing. The pricing by the refineries, by not building more additional refineries, keep the manufacturing cost in place, but they also lower their capacity to keep up with their growth, so therefore they're going to show a higher profit. And they are showing their 8-9% higher profit. Care. Okay, if you pay an oil executive $400,000, like the Exxon executive got when he retired, proportionately to consciousness and fairness to this world, because of the type of product it is, it's a natural thing from the earth, it's out of proportion with humanity. So there's a big dispensation that has to be accounted for at some point in time between now and the year 2012. So dispensations will build up, and they come out as apocalypses. That's what happens when you have that kind of energy building up. So the next thing we look at is the tax on oil. Okay, it was the 72 cents a gallon, you know, and the from the federal government. And it's 18 cents of that of the other money in the you know, oil cost is about going to the oil company. It's a profit. And then so you've got almost at a $4 thing, you've got a dollar eaten up by taxes and company profits. What about the other $3? Well, the other $3, okay, probably a dollar of that goes into the cost of the oil itself and the refining it. So now you've got $2 left over. Where does that go? Well, that goes in the back pocket. That's called pocketing. That is very subtly drained away and goes into the people's pockets that control the whole world. Because, for example, if you look at Brazil, what is Brazil? I haven't checked Brazilian oil prices lately, but I'm sure they might be up to 40 cents a gallon now at the most. So some South American countries are well under 50 cents a gallon, doing just quite fine. So you won't hear that in the news. You'll have to go on the internet and check all that out. So these are the kinds of things that are going on. So the government says, well, we're oil dependent. Well, if we're oil dependent, and you know, then that's because we haven't been allowed to do our free energy stuff. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. I'm talk about making things more efficient. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So these allowances haven't been allowed to happen because if you do develop a carburetor that gets 200 miles per gallon, you won't live long enough to sell the first one. And I've seen both sides of that fence with Stephen Greer in the Disclosure Project, where we've actually had the inventors confront the agents of the government who wrecked their labs. We've actually had open forums with that taking place in the past. So it gets really, really crazy after a while. And even right now, at this very moment, we could put ethanol back into the gasoline. We could make the gasoline 15% gas, and the other 85% ethanol, it would run in your car just like it does now. It would run perfectly. You wouldn't have to make any changes at all. And ethanol, so then what does Congress say? What does the president say? Well, we can't relax the air standards, the standards of air environmental standards by putting ethanol in the gas. Because realize, you would take away 85% of the fossil fuel. And if we are 60% dependent on foreign oil, we would only be 10% dependent on foreign oil, if even that. We probably wouldn't even have to have it at all. We could probably do the whole thing from inside our own boundaries, if we wanted to. But remember, there's foreign oil interests here. Iran, Iraq, Liberia. There's a lot of countries in Africa that produce oil. People aren't aware. Nigeria, by the way, the quality of fuel, of raw oil, is based on the quality of Nigerian crude. Nigerian crude is probably the best oil there is. It's also the most expensive. It's easiest to refine, has fewer things that are thrown away. And then pretty much all of the fossil fuel products are used for something, whether it be plastic, chemicals, aspirin for you to eat. A lot of your new over-the-counter antidepressant drugs all have an oil base. So one of them, of course, is your Tamiflu, which has got cyclohexane in it, which is a poison, but it's also got some oil derivatives. So if you start to understand all of this, you know, where these things come, formaldehyde, used in a lot of products, is also an oil derivative. If you start realizing acetone, all the ketones, they all are amides, they all come from there. So it just goes on and on. So right away, the big hole in the argument about, well, we got to relax environmental standards with use of ethanol, is that ethanol doesn't have any environmentally unfriendly characteristics. Ethanol is what we would have produced had we taken a hemp plant and manufactured that hemp plant into a form of alcohol called ethanol and used it. Ethanol will produce carbon dioxide and water. You can literally drink the water that drips out of the back of the car if it's running on that stuff. So the environmental concerns of using ethanol, which is currently available from producing just from corn fields alone, we'll produce it. We've got plenty of surplus corn. Ethanol is available. But they don't want to use it because not only does it burn cleaner, but it also puts the smog industry out of business, another big business, because now we wouldn't have smog anymore. So I would like somebody to tell me where all this is really leading. It's leading towards the retributionary product of man against nature. That's where it's going. Well, this wasn't the first time for me to have this experience, not at all. Back in the early 70s, around 1974, I had left NASA and started my own company called Scopes Unlimited. And if you go to my Fred Bell personal files on the bbsradio.com website, go to page 3, page 3 under the personal section, you will see a picture of a Lincoln Continental a business card that says Scopes Unlimited in my building in the background, which is part of a complex. That complex was built by a friend of mine whose name was Ken Kesey, not the poet, but Ken Kesey of Anaheim, California, a friend of Ronald Reagan's. Kesey family was a very large Standard Oil-related family, retired Ken was. And he built that compound, and then I subleased a building from him and did all the build-outs on it. And so we had all of this. It was back in about 1972 when we put this together, this beautiful complex. Ken Kesey, being a retired oil person and now an entrepreneur in building things and setting up all kinds of stuff, decided that why not have our own, because he was so well connected to Standard Oil at the time, why not let's just have our own gas pump? So we had that. So Ken put a couple of 10,000-gallon tanks in the ground, filled them up with gasoline, and each one of us tenants, each that had a building there, I had about a 5,000-square-foot facility at the time, was given a key with a code on it, and whenever we needed gasoline, we just went right out front to our private pump and filled our cars up. So we never had a problem waiting in those gasoline lines. I decided to get a little bit wise with the whole idea, and I had that 1972 Mark IV Lincoln Continental. It was brand new at the time. So I decided to put a reserve tank in it. So I put an additional 30-gallon reserve tank in the back of that car. And then I, being a pilot, I went over to the aviation store and I bought an aviation fuel valve so that I could switch the gasoline from my regular tank in the back of that Continental, which held about 23 or 24 gallons, to my 30-some-odd gallon reserve tank. And it was quite common for me to go down the road at a certain point, and the gas gauge on the car, which was hooked to the regular gas tank, would go to zero. I would expect the car to start to stop, and as soon as it started slowing down, telling me it was running out of fuel, I would just switch that gauge, and the car would catch up. It might pause for another couple seconds, and the second fuel supply would come in, and I knew I had another several hundred miles of gas, but I didn't have a gauge on it. So a really strange thing happened one day. This car could go all the way to San Francisco, on pretty much all the way back on a tank of gas. So I only had to fill it up once in a while. And during that time, I had sold Scopes Unlimited and semi-retired for a while. And then I started Pyridine, and I knew the range of that car was, I think, with those two tanks of gas, had a range of somewhere around 400 miles, maybe a little bit more. I don't quite remember the numbers. But when I first started Pyridine, I used to have to go to Los Angeles. And when I'd go up to Los Angeles, I had a wire bender up there. It's called Ferguson Wire Products. Later on, it became Enterprise Wire Products. It was a friend of mine named Ron Spicer owned the company. He was probably one of the people that's responsible for the birth of this company, because I couldn't get anybody wire benders in those days to make a pyramid right except him, which he made them. Well, we used to haul pyramids around. I'd go up there, and that had a big trunk, even with that fuel tank in one side, on the left side, it still had left a very large trunk. I didn't have any truck. And he would make 500 or 600 or 700 9-inch wire pyramids for me, the bare frames like you wear on your head. We played them with gold and call them pyridomes. We played them with copper. We call them fire domes, and we played them with silver. We call them ray domes. They all have different effects on the body. The bottom line is, I'd go up there, and I would completely fill that trunk up. I figured out how many pyramids the car would hold in the back. Somewhere around 700, if I remember. I'd have him make 700, so I'd be at capacity, because I didn't want them in the back seat, because they'd mess up the back seat. They have a kind of a grease on them when they finish making them, because that grease was there to protect the wire from rusting until you plate it, that they're made out of. If you don't have this, like a cosmoline grease on them, the air and the moisture in the air will cause them to rust, and so by the time you get them to the plater, they're a little bit rusty, and it's an extra step to clean the rust off. So therefore, I would just keep them in the back of the car and not in the front seat, because that cosmoline would get all over the seats. Well, one day, I didn't have time to take the pyramids out, out of the car when I was bringing them here to Laguna Beach. And So I was driving around. I left the pyramids in the car. Well, it just had happened that before I'd picked them up that day, I'd filled both tanks up at our compound. And so both tanks were full. And the pyramids were in there, and I decided, well, let's go ahead and I'll unload them in a little while, maybe in a few days. Well, things came up. I was busy, and I didn't have time to get out there and unload all these pyramids. It took quite a while to unload these pyramids from the trunk of the car. And they were layered and layered all in layers. So there were lots of them in there. They were all stacked neatly from the base up. They weren't thrown in at random. They were all neatly stacked, one on top of the other. So in effect, you're amplifying a lot of pyramid power when you stack all those pyramids. Well, I remember driving down the road on the freeway and looking at my main gas gauge, and it, pretty much religiously, between 220 to 221 to 226 miles, the way whatever my patterns were, that car would run out of gas. That was a given. So I would, when it's about 218, 219 came up, rather than just switch the tank, I always let it run out. I don't know why, just fun, kind of the fun of switching the tanks, maybe. So I was prepared. I was watching the gas gauge, the mileage, and the gas gauge, of course, was already at empty by now. And I was expecting that car to quit any moment. Any moment. So we got to 220 and hadn't quit. And I was on the freeway that day. I never forget it. I think I was going over Riverside somewhere. So I had a constant speed going. It didn't matter when it ran out because I'd have plenty of time to switch it over before the engine completely stalled. So I got up to 230 and I says, what's wrong here? This is kind of unusual. You can't go more. I could have gone less if I hadn't filled the tank, but I filled the tank to the top like I always did, but ran out the filler pipe, which was not supposed to do it, but I did it anyway. And I got to 240, and still, the thing's still running. And maybe I thought, well, my mileage is working. I looked down to see if I'd accidentally switched the reserve tank early. No, it was shut off. I got to 250. That's a big old Lincoln Continental. It still hadn't run out of the main tank. Because remember, the pyramids are sitting over the main tank. And they got up to about 260. 2 or 3 miles, which was quite a bit. It was like 261, 262 before it ran out. And I had to switch it. Well, I got 30 more miles out of that car. And I got to thinking, how did that happen? I hadn't done no magnets on the motor because those hadn't been thought of in those days. What happened here? So I remembered, wait a minute, I ain't even carrying a load here. I've got probably, I don't know, those pyramids probably weigh half a pound. So I've got 300 pounds of pyramids in the back here. And should get worse gas mileage than if I was driving around with an empty trunk, which usually when I had an empty trunk, I wasn't carrying pyramids. I only did that once in a while. And with an empty trunk, I would get, like I said, 220, 221. 222 to 218, somewhere in there, depending on if it's in the city a lot or whatever. But it was in 5 miles. Here I am at close to 260, 252, and it switches, and I'm carrying a 300-pound load. Probably without that, I probably would have got another 10 or 15 miles out of it. But the bottom line was, there was only one thing that could cause that, was those pyramids. So I went ahead and left the pyramids in the back and ran the second tank through, which now the second tank was next to the pyramids. It wasn't directly on a Lincoln Continental. The gas tank is directly under the trunk. Directly. Look, check it out. 72. The tank on the side, it was probably affected. And it ran further. I think I went close to 565 miles or something on it, where I normally would go for something on that tank gas. So I got about 20%, 25% better gas mileage. If you were to take a $4 a gallon of gas, multiply that times 20, it's 80 cents. That would knock the cost of that gas down to $3.20. If you were to take a $3 gallon of gas and multiply that times 20%, it would knock it down to $2.40 a gallon. Do the numbers and see where I'm coming from here. So I realized that the pyramids gave the car better gas mileage. Now, many years later, I understand why this all worked, which I'll explain the mechanism. But the fact was, it worked. So I had Ron, I went up to Enterprise, and I asked him, and I said, I want you to make me some one-inch pyramids. I want to conduct an experiment here because I think these pyramids get better gas mileage. So he made me a bunch of 1-inch diameter pyramids, which we use today in one of our products called the MicroStar. And then we have the new product that we just came out with, or coming out with, called the Mini Star Orb, which is a small star orb that goes inside your car. So we are coming out now with some products that will enhance gas mileage and energy inside the car. It's a brand new field that we were coming there anyway. But meanwhile, I realized I had to do something with this. I had proven with many tanks of gas that I now had a Lincoln Continental that instead of going 400 miles, 400 and some miles, would go well into the high fives on two tanks, one tank of gas combined with these pyramids in the trunk. So I asked my friend Alan Schwartz at the time, what should we do with this idea? He was one of my friends and entrepreneur, and he got me in touch with Thomas Murphy, Thomas A. Murphy. Thomas Murphy, this is where it gets real interesting. Thomas Murphy was the general manager. He ran the chairman of the board also of General Motors. He worked for him for 42 years. In fact, he just recently died on January 18th this year at 91 years old. Hell of a nice guy. Talked to him on the phone a bunch about this. Came up with an idea. If you take a, you prove it to General Motors. Here's how we proved it to General Motors. You take a 1-gallon tank, make a 1-gallon square gas tank. Take a row of our little 1-inch pyramids and fill the bottom row of fill the bottom part. Imagine a 1-gallon gas tank about the size of 3 cigar boxes stacked one on top of the other. So you have an idea of the size of it. Well, you could put a lot of 1-inch pyramids in there. You want to put a row on the bottom. Then you want to put another row of pyramids above, starting with the peak of the first row. You want to put a second row in. And then above them, another row. And you'll end up with probably 1, 2, 3, 4 rows of pyramids in there. Each row would be about 9 inches wide by about 12 inches long. So you'd have, probably 60, 70, 80 pyramids in there. Maybe 90, these small pyramids, in a gallon, in this little box, little tank. Then go out and get yourself, make yourself 2 of these tanks, but don't put pyramids in the other one, okay? And then just hook it up to your, find something that you drive around, like your lawnmower, and run it for a while, or hook it up to your, hook it up to your car. Just get under the hood and unhook the gas line, and drive it one tank till it runs out of the pyramid charged gasoline, and the other one regular empty 1-gallon can, and see what the difference is in your gas mileage. You're going to be finding you're getting at 20-25% better gas mileage. So I gave this experiment over to Thomas Murphy. Now, funny thing about Thomas Murphy was that he left General Motors in 81. Roger Smith came in. If you remember Michael Moore in his movie, Roger Smith was the one that Michael Murphy was always attacking in all his movies. But anyway, that's just a funny thing that all happened at the same time. But Thomas Murphy himself, being a predecessor to Roger Smith at General Motors, was a really cool guy. So I had Thomas Murphy, he was convinced that this pyramid thing was a great idea. So I asked him, I said, well, now that you understand this will work, when can we start putting these grid systems in your gas tanks of your cars? He said, well, we can't. I said, what do you mean you can't? You know this works. And my friend Alan knows about it. You've tried it. You know it works. Why don't you do it? He says, we can't. He says, why? He says, because we are regulated by the petroleum industry. They'll cause us more problems. He says, politically, it won't work. We can't get better gas mileage out of these cars. We have to build them to a certain specification with no alternatives. We're limited. I says, you got to be kidding. He says, nope, I'm not kidding. This is the way it is. Now, this is talking off the record because him and Alan Schwartz were very good friends. This is private conversations, not in a boardroom, not a formal introduction. This is talking in the backyard like at a lunchtime kind of conversation. And speaking of lunches, just so you understand, the group of people I was hanging out with at the time, Ken Cassie, who built this wonderful building for me and gave me my own effectively gas pump, was very good friends with Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, about once a month, was down there to visit Ken Kesey from his house up in Santa Barbara. He'd come down, and every month I'd get a phone call, because Ken and I were great friends, from Ron Reagan when he was governor. Hey, Fred Bell, why don't you come out and have lunch with us? I don't know how many times it turned him down. What an idiot I was, but I was just too busy with my companies and stuff. I was just so involved with that. So that was the group, and, of course, Alan was in that group, and so was Thomas Murphy. So Thomas just said, we can't do it. I'm sorry. We cannot do that. I was appalled. So I realized, forget the automotive industry. Now, if you want to do it, or you want it done, I can do it for you. If you send me a tank like you have in your car, I can actually manufacture one of these tanks for you and give it back to you. I mean, I have to split it in half and put the pyramids in it, which we can do. Not a problem. But I'm not doing it yet. But if the gas thing goes up, I might start a second business and just retrofit gas tanks for people with pyramids in them. I've got a huge supply of the one-inch pyramids. Like I say, we're using them in our products. I don't have to plate them because we're not dealing with the human body and the orgone effect. Gasoline works fine with a plain old steel pyramid in it, but you've got to use them in grids because it takes several of them, because each one produces a crystalline field in the carbon structure of the DNA of the, I mean, if it had, gasoline had a DNA, it doesn't have a DNA, but there's a carbon ring and benzene ring, they call it. So we can make these tanks. I've thought about it now. It's going to maybe a possibility, because if the General Motors or Chrysler won't do it, why not? Maybe we just start another enterprise and start making these tanks. It's I'm very, very interested in doing something like that. But I really didn't want, I wanted to keep Pyridine going in the direction that it is with consciousness, because when you wear the pyramid on your head, you get a higher octane burning head. Your brain works a lot better. Now, the way the chemistry works on this is that life force, the pyramid establishes a timeless cavity for the life force to come through. That's why in your body, in the carbon atom and in the iron atom in your blood, it's that shaped. It's an octahedron. Remember, we've talked about many times the shape of the octahedral shape of the structure of the pyramid supports the life force. And then the life force, when it's thread as a needle through our bodies, through all the different nadis and vessels and veins and arteries that the blood goes through, if you were to make that a solid picture, you would actually see the form of God within your own nature illuminated by these blood molecules. And the blood molecules in that form, in that shape, as they flow through your body all at once, then form a holograph or hologram, and that hologram of course then hosts the life force. So if you look at what fossil fuel is a decayed life form. It's a fossil. It's a fossilized form of carbon that's still liquefied by the pressure of the earth, and it hasn't gone into a hard state. So it's a decaying life force. So what happens is, when you bring this fossil fuel, this decaying life force, tissue, bone, everything all dissolved in there, but once was animated by a living thing. Remember that. That's the secret. There's an animation here that was there. It's like raising the dead, you know, when you bring it out of the ground. And the breathing the vapors of it creates a dead state in consciousness anyway. That's why when you wear the pyramid, it uncreates that death state that you've received, an unconscious death state. Because to me, death is nothing more than an unconscious state. So it creates that unconscious state by being in the atmosphere. And so when you put the pyramid on your head, it immediately detoxes your brain by deionizing the inside of the brain and also rearranging the molecules of the brain. And so it wakes you up. Well, when you go through what's called the cracking process or the heating process of raw oil, you basically start heating the oil up, and the vapors that come off of that are captured at various levels in these things called condensers. And so by capturing in these condensers these various vapors, you determine what grade of gasoline or what product, whether you're producing acetone or paint thinner or kerosene or high octane fuel. And at any level of temperature where you have these condensers and this vapor is pulled out and liquefied, that determines the octane rating of your gas. So that's how gas is made. So what happens is, let's say you have a, in those days we had 102-octane gas. That's still, octane was levels around. The reason that they've lowered the octane levels, by the way, is not another lie in our society about fuel. High octane creates more pollution. Big lie. High octane produces less pollution because you have cleaner burning, higher efficiency burning. But high octane gas costs more to make, and you get less out of it than you do low octane. So that's a big lie. As a matter of fact, how many of you, here's your choices. You want, and then diesel fuel, by the way, kerosene is a low, low, low octane fuel. Creates huge amounts of olefins, they're called. Their poisons are called olefins. They're very bad for you. So what would you rather be behind, a super-tuned, highly-tuned, efficient-running race car or a great big diesel truck going down the road? Which one would you rather follow? I think you'd probably rather be behind the race car. It's a lot cleaner back there than the truck. So that right there just shows you how you've been lied to by the petroleum industry anyway, and the government and all the lying factions that we have. Beautiful thing about our president right now, he is a perfect example of a lying machine. He is a beautiful example of how the Piscean consciousness can lie and actually believe themselves and think they're being believed. And we call that going into a bubble. So we got a lot of bubble heads or bubble consciousness out there. Now, these oil execs, there's not much difference between the oil industry and the tobacco industry when it comes to greed, avarice, and covering up, putting things under the rug. Let me tell you something. Look how long Exxon glaringly took, once again, manipulated power structures, you know, buying fuel here, buying electricity here, selling it there. They manipulated that, hid the books, and for several years, literally, the executives stole billions out of the company. You don't think the oil industry doesn't do the same thing? They're just a little better at it. They're just, they have more controlled egos than Ken Lay and all the people that were at Emeron. So anyway, with all that behind us, when the high-octane fuels burn, and before the high-octane fuel, once it's processed, and then it's placed into the pyramid, inside of a pyramid structure, what happens is the life force reignites the fossil fuel. Remember, this fossil fuel is dead, but we've brought it closer back to life by making a high, clear form of gasoline out of it. We've refined it to the nth degree. So now what happens is it's sort of getting its life back, and the octane is sort of gives life to a motor, and a high octane gas is like life. It's a life force. It's partially restore. We've taken the worst of the death of that dinosaur fuel, the most decayed product of what the fossil fuel is, and we've brought some life back to it by refining it, but not much. But when you put the gasoline inside of a pyramid, it will, because the pyramid, remember, contains the life force itself, it will reanimate. It doesn't put soul in the gasoline, because gasoline doesn't have a soul like we do, but it does have a life force to it, and that's what it burns. Burning, you know, burning is involving a salamander. I mean, fire is a salamander. If you look at fire metaphysically, it's a salamander. It's fire, you know. The four elements of the earth are elements. They're elementals. These are structures. So if the salamander is the flaming part of the gasoline, is given more life from the pyramid energy's life force, the salamander energy increases, then therefore the octane level of the fuel is going to increase tremendously, way beyond 102 or 91 as it is today. It's going to go way up beyond that, and it becomes a much more efficiently combustible material. So the pyramid, by reinventing the life force in this dying thing called fossil fuel, has now reinvented itself and brought it partially back to life, restoring its octane levels. So this is the kind of stuff that we've done years ago at Paradigm. And so I think that it might be possible to do something again. I'm willing to do some of this work. If somebody wants me to do their gas tank for them, I'd love to do it. And but I wouldn't try to sell the idea to anybody, because it's going to fall on deaf ears in the automotive industry. The government won't believe it because they're dead anyway. But if you want to order some of these pyramids from me and make your own experiments, I'll gladly sell them to you with a drawing. I had one individual I did this for. It was one of our listeners, actually. I drew all this out for him, but he didn't seem to have the ability to follow it through, unfortunately. But I'm sure some of you out there have a little bit of fortitude and will follow it through. Will I build another one of these gas tanks to prove a point? Maybe. I've got so many things that I'm doing right now. Now, the gas prices, to me, are not of any concern for the simple reason I don't go anywhere. And it's going to happen anyway. I would love to get out there on a crusade, but I've been crusading for years for, you know, hemp fuels to be brought back. Remember, 39 million acres, which isn't that much, will run all of the United States fuel requirements, and hemp takes care of all our fuel requirements for everything, electricity, cars, trains, everything, airplanes. And on top of that, it will the hemp plants produce four times more oxygen than a tree, so it will repair our environment. I put this forward. Luckily, the Canadians are starting to do that now. They not only grow hemp, but they grow corn, and they are producing ethanol. And you can go on the computer, on the internet, rather, and you can actually, I forget what it costs, but you can buy a machine that will, a little still, I could call it, that will make, you can make your own ethanol for your gas. I think it makes about 340 or 50 gallons, one of them I was looking on there. They don't cost that much. They're under $2,000, if I remember correctly. This is off memory now. Don't quote me as being exactly right. You just need the area to, you know, grind up your plants and marinate them a little bit to get them into the fuel. Put this machine up. It's not that big. And then, of course, you're going to need storage tanks because I think it likes to make like 300 gallons at a time. But if you think about it, 300 gallons would probably run you quite a while. Then if you incorporate the pyramid energy into the distilling process, you can make a very highly efficient form of methanol and ethanol, rather, E-T-H-A-N-O-L. And so I think we got a lot of alternatives here. And I think that if we look at this, the greed, the oil companies, of course, don't care about the economy of this country as long as they're stockholders. Some of their stockholders, unfortunately, are, you know, and they're in their retirement funds and things that they've got, are probably making some money off of the fact that their stocks are rising and they have oil company stocks, but on the other end, they're getting it in the shorts because they're paying so much for fuel costs. So it's a round robin, a catch-22 for a lot of investors. So the crowing and cowing of the oil execs that we see on television saying, well, banks make more money than we do, and blah, blah, blah. Well, the banks aren't raping us. You know, 4% is plenty for this kind of industry because it's going to be a continuous thing with fixed costs. It's not going to have any surprises, even 6%. But when you start, you know, and the big side of it to me is even if you leave the gas, you know, the gas industry alone, let's take the 72 cents tax off of it. You know, I think this country collects about $1.3 or $1.7 trillion a year in taxes off of gasoline. Okay, and that's quite a bit. So, of course, the government doesn't want to. They want to cut taxes. Don't. And the other thing that's really funny is, we'll give you $100. That's a gimmick now. We'll give everybody $100 that uses gas. That'll compensate for it. $100 is about, that would compensate you for about five fill-ups, maybe 1 month, maybe 2 months, probably a month and a half of a higher cost if you're an average user. $100, about a month and a half. That, what about the other 10 and a half months? You're going to give $100 for those two? Maybe about $1,000 is what each person should get, which really wouldn't be a whole lot against the taxation of 72 to 78 cents a gallon, depending on where the prices are. So the government's not trying to do anything, especially Bush. You talk to him about, you know, taxing the oil industry, putting a lid on their profits. You know, I don't think they should do that. I'm not supporting the gas company. I think all people have a right to our incomes, and if it happens to be the petroleum industry, it's a loser deal anyway. But you have a right. You've chosen that. You're going to pay the karma for it in the end anyway. But so it's a very interesting argument. But, you know, taking pyramids and putting them in your fuel tanks, that's better. That makes gas last longer, less evolving. using corn and hemp plants to produce ethanol, that's an alternative. We should be doing that. We could have hemp, we could have ethanol in our fuel within 3 weeks, just so you know. And there's plenty of it around. Or the government could take our surplus. We've got way too much fuel because of Iran and all the fuel that we've stored from there. We've got way too much fuel in our tanks right now, in our reserves. We should cut that loose and let the American public have. We don't need to. It's okay to bring America up. My feeling is it's okay to get the price up to $4 a gallon like it is in Europe or $4.50. But don't do it in 1 year or 2 years and lie to the people. Bring it up gradually. Let the economy adjust to it. Let the let it track with inflation. They try to say, well, it's tracking with inflation. No, it's not. It's completely out of, you know, if you look at what gas cost 4 years ago versus now, and which is about $2 a gallon less, and if you track that up, inflation, you know, the cost of life has not doubled in 2 years or 4 years. That means 25% a year is what our inflation rates are going. So that argument goes down the toilet. There's just about every argument that you hear on this, on the news or anywhere else in the newspapers, should be in the toilet because it's that stupid. I mean, people actually, I don't think anybody really believes it anymore. No wonder the ratings of the presidency are hitting the 30%. They'll be in the high 20s soon, and rightfully so. And it doesn't matter if you drive a gas guzzler. That's fine. You need a gas guzzler. That's good. But get the right, you know, get the pyramids in the tank, get the ethanol out of the pumps, which doesn't create any pollution, and go buy yourself a Mack truck and drive it around. It won't hurt the environment anymore. And it might make you feel safer. It doesn't matter. So all these arguments go nowhere when there are very easy choices, very good alternatives to go into immediately, if not sooner. So anyway, I'll probably hear from a few of you. Paradigm Seminar, we're going to cover some of this in the seminar. You need to get signed up for that. Dr. Deagle and myself will be going to have a blast, and Valerie Olmsted is going to be here, Dr. Valerie. She's going to be talking about our holographic systems. Now, we haven't even tried to put a projector in a gas tank. Oh, boy. There's a lot of R&D that you can do out there on your own and send me the results if you're really so inclined to do that. We've got so many things to play with, so many directions to go, so many choices. It's ridiculous not to do some of this. But I may have to actually go out and build another gas tank for one of my cars. I'm not sure. Because I've done this before, I've just had put it off because of, you know, this Thomas Murphy, you know, was a great guy to talk to, very great humanitarian overall. He was a great, great person. He wasn't just some greedy General Motors car guy for 42 years. He was a human being. My dad, of course, worked with Henry Ford. Henry Ford was a great guy too. And so I've been in this industry for a while, even though I'm a New Age, you know, pyramid-oriented, consciousness-raising person, or try to be anyway. I've still got a very hard side to me where I've been through the paces of the oil industry and the energy industry. So I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. I hope it gives you some ammunition to write letters, get involved, get yourself a pyramid tank, whatever you got to do, get ethanol going, buy one of those distillers, check out how the Canadians are starting to do it. They're the most progressive around, seems like these days, except two Canadians I know, Doug and Don. They're not very progressive, but they're a little recessive. So don't look at Doug and Don as the way Canadians are, because they're the opposite. You know, these guys are more Texans than anything, I think, these days. They're funny guys, aren't they? But we love them anyway. They're trying. So anyhow, I hope you enjoy the show. Expect some music coming in here any minute. I'm not sure where it is. Oh, there it is. Ooh, it's coming in. Oh, there's Bud Deal on that saxophone. 1-800-729-2603 is my number. The DBS radio number, I guess you'll get it off the website. Go to page 3 and look at that big Lincoln Continental. Look at my old shop. That was a really nice facility where we did all this fun stuff. I'm glad you enjoyed tonight's show. I guess you would say this is April 30, 2006. See you on the highways, the byways, the spaceways. I wish I was doing that series. Semyasi was so much, her gas mileage is great in that spaceship. So that's it. Another Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Said good night. It was the good part you didn't get, I know. Good night, Mrs. Calabasas, wherever you are. Yossi, can I drive the spaceship? Can I fly this puppy, please? I promise to behave. I won't fly it upside down under a bridge ever again. That was a mistake. I know. Ooh.
The most astounding book of our generation, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light by Dr. Fred Bell. Bring energy and healing technologies into your life that have been kept secret for centuries, exposed or highly classified research projects in use today at NASA and Area 51. The book is available on Dr. Bell's website, www.pyradyne.com. You'll also see more information about Dr. Bell's nuclear receptors, which allow our bodies to process all forms of electromagnetic and chemical toxins, assuring longer, healthier life. Call 1-800-729-2603 today.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.